I'm your host, Shalina Tobin, aka Posh Nosh Girl. Today I'm joined by one of Britain's most versatile chefs, Josh Angus. During a career that's seen him working in Michelin-starred kitchens, being a development chef and a private chef, Josh has acquired a myriad of skills that he puts to great use in the fabulous Michelin-starred Hyde restaurant in London. Join me as I chat to him about his journey into his very established and successful career. Josh, it's been a really turbulent year. How have you been through the pandemic?
Yeah, very well, thank you. And thank you for the intro there. It's been good. I mean, obviously, it's been very tough times for the industry and for everyone involved, but not just our industry, everyone. But I think we've had tough times, but we've come out strong. We've done everything we can to keep going. So I'm happy with what we've done over the time.
Yeah, and I mean, is it you've been focusing on Hyde Away solely?
So Hyde at Home is what we were doing mainly. And then we opened Hyde Away pretty much in lockdown, to be honest. So we opened Hyde Away as well. So we were quite focused on that. But then I was more predominantly on Hyde at Home, which is our takeaway delivery service that we've had throughout all three lockdowns.
Yeah, we've actually ordered it, and it's a brilliant kit. We really, really enjoyed it. And is it something that you're going to continue to do once we open up fully?
So no, not really. We've kind of come to the decision that I've had a long time doing takeaways. We kind of justified what we wanted it to do. And we just want to concentrate back on the restaurant now. It was fun while it lasted, but I think I've kind of had enough of takeaway boxes and stuff. And I want to concentrate back on the plates and doing what we do best and cooking back in the restaurant, to be honest.
Okay, amazing. That sounds good. And we can't wait to come and eat at the restaurant again. So you had a really interesting start to your career in the sense that, I mean, you were head chef in the first two restaurants that you started at, and then you moved on to being a commis chef in Michelin-starred kitchens. Talk to us about how that happened. It's quite interesting, that sort of dynamic.
Yeah, so originally from Sheffield, got into cooking a little bit later. Well, 18, I started cooking. Kind of always knew I wanted to be a chef. It's the only thing that really got me interested at school. I was a bit of a naughty boy, or I found more fun in girls and football, I would say, not really education. So there was sports and food technology, the only things that really interested me at school. So I always knew I wanted to be a chef, but I ended up doing my A-levels anyway. As soon as I got 18, went to college in Sheffield. And then I just worked in a few different restaurants in Sheffield. And like I said, I stayed at one place. I was there 2 years. It was a small little wine bar, probably like two Rosette Sanders, I think it was. And then we opened another site as well in the centre of Sheffield. So I ended up becoming like head chef of both little wine bars. Small place, probably 5 chefs in both kitchens altogether, so very, very small.
Yeah.
I think I was 20 maybe or 21, and I was just like, what am I doing? I've been cooking for 2-3 years maybe, something like that. I was just like, I need to make a decision now to really focus on what I want to do. So I ended up applying for, I think it was 10 Michelin restaurants or something, like a couple of 2 stars, 3 stars, ones back in the day, like Le Gavroche, Le Manoir, the Vineyard, I think it was. We're talking quite a long time ago now. But then I just applied to them all, and I had a few different trials at a few of them. Went to Gordon Ramsay's, got offered a job there. But then I ended up choosing Le Manoir, and obviously went in as a commis chef, yeah, like you said. So a big drop from head chef to commis chef.
Yeah.
11 grand pay cut, so that was a nice surprise as well. But it was the best decision I've made, and literally I've not looked back, and I've not I've worked in a Michelin kitchen ever since. I've not worked in Michelin, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's just an amazing experience and got me, I don't know, just opened my eyes up to what food can actually be. I mean, I was probably cooking here and then you can just go straight to here or even higher. And it was just, yeah, it just opens up your eyes. I mean, there's so much you can do with food or so little. And yeah, it's an amazing experience.
And so for you, I mean, it's quite interesting because what was it that opened your eyes up to a better way of cooking? Because, I mean, as far as a young 20-year-old guy, you're probably thinking, I've made it. I'm already head chef of two places. What was the trigger that made you think, well, actually, there's so much more to this. There's you're focusing more about, you know, the quality of your cooking as opposed to the kind of role that you could achieve. So how did you get there? Had you been, you know, dining out in Michelin starred restaurants that made you realize there was a massive difference in quality of food?
No, not really. I mean, because where I'm from, Sheffield, unfortunately, there isn't massive amount of, I don't think there's any Michelin restaurants anymore. There used to be one, but it wasn't something like that I used to do. I mean, my family didn't really used to eat out in Michelin kitchens. They do a lot now because of me. So do my parents and my brothers and sisters and stuff. They like to quite think they're foodies now, but I think that's more linked to me. But I think, I don't know, I suppose I was just thinking I want better and I can be better. And if I want to be as good at this, then I need to go and learn from the best. And where I wasn't learning. I'd have to teach myself. And yes, there's some amazing chefs that have taught themselves, but I wasn't in that position. And also I just wanted to travel a bit and just take the experience and go learn from the best, really.
Yeah, and it sounded like a pretty good decision. Very, very difficult though. As you mentioned, you took a big pay cut.
Yeah, I did, but I mean, like you say, I was 20 years old or 21 years old and it doesn't matter, it's paid off now, so I can't really complain about that.
So tell us what it was like for you working at Le Manoir.
Amazing experience, very hard, very, very hard. I was only there for about a year and a half due to illness and stuff, but yeah, it was a big shock to my system because, like I said, I was working in a tiny little wine bar. We were doing 10, 12 hours a day maximum probably. And then you go to Le Manoir, you're doing 17, 18 hours a day some days. And it was just tough. It was tough, but amazing experience. Seeing the fresh produce, working with amazing produce, just seeing how much like detail goes into the dishes and working in a big team and stuff. It was very eye-opening and also everyone knows how beautiful Le Manoir is and the school of training of what it used to be and what it still is. And obviously with Raymond Blanc and Gary Jones and stuff. Amazing experience, but it kind of opened my eyes up to what I want to do and where I want to work and the standard I want to work at.
Mm. And how much of a role did Raymond Blanc play in mentoring you?
Do you want me to be honest?
1,000%, yeah.
I mean, he's an amazing guy and he's always tries to, like, obviously he's there, but he didn't mentor me, do you know what I mean? There's Le Manoir is a big kitchen. I think when I was there, there was probably about 50 chefs on the rota. So I'd be very surprised if he knew my name. But he's there and obviously the life and the soul and the everything about Manoir is Raymond Blanc. But Gary Jones is the leader. He's the one that sets you all up and his seniors are the ones that help train. And Gary James is very full on. He's the guy that's on the pass running it. RB would have been on the pass a bit when I was there. I think more so when before my time. Obviously, he has a lot more commitments to books and TV work or whatever it might be. I mean, there's a lot of filming when I was there. I remember one night we did filming on my section on a Saturday night. He was meant to come down at like 5:30, 6 o'clock to do some filming with on my section, and we were going to do two dishes for one of his shows. And then he ended up coming down at 8:30 in the middle of a Saturday night service. And he's like, right, we're going to film now. I'm like, right, okay. like 120 cover service. And I'm just filming next to RB, going through his show or something. And he's like, obviously talking about the beautiful dish. And I'm like, yeah, this is amazing. And then we finished filming. And then Gary Jones is like, right, we're going on this table, this table. I'm like, oh, my God. It's an amazing experience. Like,
but a lot of pressure, sounds like.
Yeah, with every job, but yeah.
Yeah. So you mentioned you were there for a year and a half before you left.
Yeah.
Did you want to talk about the reason why you left?
Yeah, I'm open to it. I mean, I had a double hernia operation. I actually had the operation just before I started Le Mans Noir. I don't know why I was doing a lot of like fitness. I was boxing 3 or 4 times a week, playing football 3 or 4 times a week. This is when obviously I wasn't working 18 hours a day. This is when I had a nicer lifestyle. Then yeah, getting a double hernia, had the operation. The left side was fine, but then the right side, during my time at Le Mans Noir, it kind of like popped back out. And then also I got a bit of nerve damage through the operation. And then I was struggling to be on my feet for 18 hours a day. I was getting shooting pain up and down and stuff. So basically I had to make the decision to leave. I left, had the operation again, and it was successful this time. Basically, the kind of mesh, yeah, they put like a wire mesh or something.
Yeah.
That was kind of caught around some nerve or something. But they fixed it, and then I had to have a bit of rehabilitation, and then basically a bit of massage every week and different stuff, and just working myself back to the standard I wanted to be, really.
Yeah.
But yeah, so yeah. I had to leave, and had a bit of time out of cooking. But I moved back up to Sheffield. Kind of kept myself a little bit in it, working in a few part-time gigs in Sheffield. But it was upsetting to leave, and especially the way I did. I always planned to go back, but unfortunately, I don't know, it just, things didn't happen. It just didn't happen, I suppose, how we wanted it to.
Yeah. Well, things often don't happen the way you plan them. And, you know, and I guess it did work out for you in the end. But I just wanted to talk a little bit back about just at the time when you left. I know a lot of chefs have actually spoken to me about having a hernia operation. And yeah. Mark Kicks was telling me that he was on his third, and it's because he does a lot of the lifting, and you know, he does a lot of the kind of heavy boxes with, you know, full of fish and that kind of stuff. And that's why he got it. But I was also wondering if, I know at Le Manoir, they do their own gardening and they do their own foraging. So there's a lot of like heavy gardening work, digging, that kind of thing. I was wondering if, was that a trigger?
I don't know. I mean, it's like you say, the thing is, as a chef, you're on your feet all day. You are doing a lot of lifting, even just to lift a stock pan. I mean, it's very heavy to lift the stock pan. It's 25 litres or whatever. So there's lots of different things. Also, it can be hereditary as well. I mean, my brother had a hernia operation. My granddad had a triple one. My uncle's had a triple one, I think. Wow. It's a very common thing in men as well. But yeah, I think obviously the abuse that as chefs give our body probably doesn't help. So yeah, I think it's related to the kitchen, yes, but maybe not so much to the gardening. I didn't get down to the garden too much because we were too busy in the kitchen, if I'm honest. Mm-hmm. We might go down there because we ran out of something, and we'd run quickly down there with some scissors, pick it up and then run back to the kitchen, pretend that nothing's happened.
Okay, so all right, so you took a year out almost, right, and doing a little bit of work mm-hmm. here and there, but then you moved to Hong Kong to work with Shane Osborne. Mm-hmm. He was the previous pied-à-terre head chef. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, essentially, you're kind of like starting over again. How was your training in Hong Kong versus here in the UK?
I mean, yeah, it was weird because, like I said, I probably had a year off. I was working in doing part time in some of the best restaurants in Sheffield, but I could only do 2 days a week, and the rest of the time I was working for my dad, so keeping myself busy. And then I got a phone call from a chef I used to work with at Le Manoir, actually, a guy called Josh Rain, who's the exec chef of Tetsui's in Sydney now. And he offered me like to go out to Hong Kong, and yeah, it was kind of a lifeline, and he got me back into it. And I don't know, I went out there thinking it was only with 3 months, and it was obviously longer. But the training, I guess, I was just kind of thrown into it. And I don't know, it was a bit more confidence about me, maybe because I was a little bit older. I think I was 24 by then or something. I can't remember too much, but. Yeah, and he was just kind of like, right, you're on garnish. I was like, all right, cool. And then we just got on with it. It was probably more I was training them because the standard of chefs out there weren't as high. That's why Shane brought some English lads over there to help him set the restaurant up. But amazing experience. And like I say, got me back in chefing. And yeah, and also it was an amazing experience to live over there.
Yeah, absolutely. How much time did you end up spending there?
So I did a year over there. So it was only meant to be 3 months, which was perfect. Yeah. So it was meant to be 3 months, but they kind of just kept asking me to stay longer and stay longer. Didn't go down too well with my ex-girlfriend at the time. But it was an amazing experience. And if I didn't have the ex-girlfriend, I'd probably would still be there now. But no, it was an amazing experience. And yeah, he's just a year I did, and then moved to London after, basically.
So you came back and you worked for you went you did you go straight to Oli Debut?
Yeah,
Okay.
that was my next job, basically. And the booze, yeah, I was working with a chef in Hong Kong who's worked at every Michelin place ever. And he was like, oh, you should check this place out. It's called Dabu. And I'd not really heard anything about it. He's like, because obviously Ollie was quite new at that time as well. And he's like, yeah, he's an up and coming chef. And I think he just won the Michelin star. So I was like, okay, I'll check it out. And then ended up applying there and got the job. And obviously the rest is history, I guess.
Had you not met him at Le Manoir?
No. So Ollie was before my time. Not sure what year Ollie worked there, but I think he was 4 or 5 years before me. So no, I've never met him. Obviously, I think that's what probably helped me get a trial at Dabu.
Right.
Ollie likes the school of Le Manoir as well. So yeah, but no, I never met him there. So first time I met him was obviously the trial at Dabu.
Yeah, brilliant. And so you're obviously quite happy there, but then you did move and you became a private chef. How what made you decide to make that sort of move?
I guess, I mean, the Boo was a tough kitchen. Tiny, tiny little kitchen, completely different to Hyde now. There was probably five or six of us in that kitchen. We had a six gas burner, a broken rationale half the time. It was a tough kitchen, but we produced some amazing food. So we were doing five doubles, so probably 70 hours a week or something. I'd done it for 2 years. I was tired. But also I think I kind of peaked to where I could. I mean, I'd done 2 years for him. I was sous chef, and then there was all ahead of me, there was a head chef, it was Ross Gibbons at the time. Then there was another sous chef called Mikey. So there was nowhere for me to progress. So spoke to Ollie, he kind of understood, and he obviously we've kept in touch ever since, and we did things afterwards. But no, it was just time to move on. Small kitchen, 2 years was long enough. And then the private chef, I mean, I never looked into going to private chefing. It was just a recruiter told me about the position, and to be honest, obviously, who I was the private chef for was kind of too good to pass up the opportunity. And especially when I went to do my trial, it was like, just blew me away, the whole place.
Right. And where was it?
So I was actually a private chef for the American Ambassador.
Amazing.
And it's an amazing, amazing house. So obviously the ambassador changes every 4 years. The ambassador for my time was a guy called Matthew Barsnan. And he had a young family, so really nice. It was a really nice experience. Like the kids would come into the kitchen with me, and sometimes I played football with them in the back garden and stuff, but the house was absolutely stunning. Let's put it this way. The Prime Minister would come to our house to play tennis. He had the second largest garden in London after Buckingham Palace. He's got like 14 acres.
Whereabouts was it?
Regent's Park.
Okay.
I may probably shouldn't say too much.
Too late.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
So you were living there?
No, so you just go in daily. I mean, you can stay over if you want to, because there was staff, but it's Regent's Park. I mean, central London. It's very easy for me to get there, but it was nice. I stayed over because there are staff quarters, but no, I lived there elsewhere.
So you cook for the likes of Ed Sheeran and Annie Lennox. Do you have any fun encounters that you can share with us?
Yeah, I mean, it was a bit crazy, to be honest. We'd have, like, Jimmy Carr, he used to live around the corner, and he'd come around for breakfast, like, once a week. And obviously, cooking breakfast for the ambassador every morning, he'd come down and come to the pass and order his breakfast. And if he wanted something different, he'd tell me. And then people like, yeah, Ed Sheeran, Annie Lennox. I mean, I'm quite embarrassed about Annie Lennox, because the butlers were like, oh, Annie Lennox is in the dining room having breakfast or lunch, whatever. And I was like, Annie Lennox? And then I was like texting my mum. I was like, who's Annie Lennox? My mum was like, how do you not know Annie Lennox? I was like, maybe I'm showing my age, I don't know. But yeah, and then obviously quite a few different people, Ed Sheeran, Bastille, Ellie Goulding. I met Michelle Obama, Donald Trump, the Queen. Lots of events were there. They do a big 4th of July event as well, where they, in the back garden, they invite like 3,000 people and just have a massive concert. And that's Bastille were playing 1 year, Duran Duran. So then we would cook them by the green room, whatever it's called, but we would cook for them. And then the lead singer of Bastille came into the kitchen, was having a beer with us and then having a chat and stuff. So yeah, that side of it was very cool and lots of different events. So amazing experience.
And when it comes to the menu for cooking for all these people, do they kind of, you know, send you a request and say, you know, this is what I really like to have, can you make something like this? Or do you sort of, you plan out the whole menu for everyone?
Yeah, it was kind of obviously depending on the size of the event, because you could do big canopy events for like 500 or something. That's a bit more what you think people would want to eat for a canopy. If it's more like a smaller dinner event, obviously you get allergens that people couldn't have, or you might have, I really want to eat salmon, so they'll have salmon. But generally you'd put a menu forward, and then the family or the ambassador or the ambassador's wife, Brooke Barson, she would generally just okay it or not okay it. That would be the kind of routine of it.
It sounds like a dream job, to be honest. Why did you leave?
Yeah, I mean, I think about it, because it was at times, and it was a amazing kitchen, amazing facilities, amazing house. You got private pension, private healthcare. But again, it just wasn't right for me. I basically, because you're doing these events and you get to do some nice food and stuff, but then 80% of the time you're cooking for the family and stuff. And The ambassador obviously used to eat out a lot, so I was generally cooking for the kids and the nanny. And unfortunately, they would want burger or plain pasta. So it kind of like I've just done
all your Michelin star training.
Michelin kitchens, and I'm cooking plain pasta with cheese. I'm like, yeah. This is what my trainers paid
really
for.
Really good pasta.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I got told I made the best scrambled eggs they've ever had, but I mean, scrambled eggs, in my opinion. And I suppose I just wanted more for myself and just wanted to push myself more. I mean, I could have settled and I could still be there now, but if I never pushed myself a bit further, then I wouldn't be in the position where I am now and I wouldn't have been head chef of Hyde. So yeah. I always had it in the back of my mind, like, I need to just go and do something now, otherwise I'll get too comfortable. So I just decided to move on.
Yeah. And so you moved on to, you did a stint at Elliston Street with Phil Howard first, is that right?
Well, I actually went to L'Octopierre before that, but that was a small stint. But yeah, went to Michelin there. I went over as sous chef because he was my, head chef was one of my very good friends. But then, yes, after that, I went to Elliston Street and opened up Elliston Street with Phil. I was one of the sous chefs. So it was me and Sally, the sous chefs. Obviously, Toby was head chef. And yeah, we opened up Elliston over there.
Yeah, I spoke to Sally a couple of weeks ago. She's really lovely to chat with.
She's a good girl. Yeah.
Yeah, really lovely energy. And did she manage to rope you into any yoga?
No, I don't think I'd be quite flexible enough for that. No, but I mean, I've been meaning to catch them over for a drink and stuff, and it's nice that we can actually go out again now and in the garden, so I think I'll be catching up with her soon, hopefully.
Brilliant. So your next big thing was Bella Zoo, is that right?
Yeah. So
development chef for them, and so for anyone that doesn't know what Bella Zoo is, it's a company that creates beautiful food products such as olive oils, tahinis, balsamic vinegar. So Josh, you were involved with the recipe development side of things. Obviously very different to what you're used to, but talk to us about that.
Yeah, again, I mean, I think you probably know better than all of us there, speaking to so many chefs, is chefs get offered jobs from other chefs, or you kind of keep getting offered stuff. So like obviously when I was in the ambassadors, I got approached for another job, and then I got approached for Phil to Elliston Street, etc., and different things. And then there was kind of a thing here as well. I was at Elliston Street. I got approached for the role at Bella Zoo for the development chef. Ross Gibbons, who used to be the head chef of the Boo, was the development chef at Bella Zoo. He was leaving, and basically he approached me and put me forward for it. And I joined them. Completely different and something that I've never done before, and something that I probably wasn't looking to do, if I'm honest. But the opportunity came up and I thought, why not? Let's give it a go. Probably something I would look to do maybe when I'm a bit older, like 45. I don't know, when I haven't got any anything left in me in the kitchen. But it was an amazing experience because you learn different sides of it. Obviously, I was developing different paste, pestos, different products that they sell, and they're still on sale now, like green olive tapenade and different pestos and zouk paste and different things that they've done, was the development chef role. They also do different events, so whether it's Taste of London or different events like that, you're on the stand cooking and doing stuff. And then they also have lots of like in-house lunches, so they invite customers over. And then me as a chef, I would cook for them using our products, obviously, and also how it might fit into their restaurant. So you might get a Michelin star chef coming for lunch, or you might get like a Zizi in for lunch, a chain. So there's different ways, and you just used to cook for them and using Bella Zoo products, really.
Right. And I mean, obviously, they're a massive company. They stock in like Tesco's and Ocado. And are any of your own recipes in there?
It's been a while now, but I think that, like I said, the green olive tapenade, there's different pestos and still things that are still there that I've done. We did the nut range as well, so different nuts I produced for them.
I actually was looking through my cupboard and I found this Zug, which we use in, don't know if you can see this, it's really bright. Use this in tagines and that kind of stuff, and it's really, really lovely products. So I guess everyone should just check these out. Do you use any of these in Hyde?
Yeah, we do. Yeah, obviously.
You do, amazing.
Yeah, because obviously I've got a connection with Belazoo, but we use them more for olive oils and olives. We use fig leaf oils are beautiful that they do. But then Rosa Rissa that they do is amazing. Different artichokes they do. I mean, they've got hundreds and hundreds of products, but we do use them at Hyde, yeah. That Zug base as well, my fiance actually developed that one. She technical director there. So she, before they had a development chef, her department would develop all the different products.
Right. Is she trained as a chef?
No, so she's trained as a chemist.
Wow, how interesting.
Yes, so she knows all the food science behind it. So I got to learn a little bit of that. They're trained as obviously the preservatives and the salt levels, etc. It needs to have to work. But no, I'm not trained as a chef, but she knows how to make a good pesto and a good paste.
Brilliant. That's super interesting. So we're on to Hyde. You moved into Hyde ground and back with Oli Dabu. And at this point, you've been a Michelin starred chef, a private chef, development chef. So your experience and, you know, your grounding to lead this kitchen is very well-rounded and spot on.
Yeah, I think as well, the good thing about Belazoo, it kind of opened me up to a different kind of management style a bit. Because obviously, like you said, it's a massive company and how their systems they do is obviously a lot more corporate than what kitchens do. I mean, they have one-to-one meetings every month and different things like that. And I suppose it's given me a bit more structure. I always knew I was going to go to Hyde, even before Belazoo, because me and Ollie have been speaking for a long time before it. I saw the site before we opened it and stuff. So I always knew it was there. Do you know what I mean? It was just obviously time to make it happen. It was an amazing opportunity and I was never going to say no to it, to be honest.
Well, so you saw Hyde when it was a car showroom.
I saw Hyde when it was a car park, pretty much, yeah. I remember going round the site the first time and Ollie's walking me around it. I'm just like, what? Like, we had to get on some scaffolding to go to the top floor in hard hats. And it's like, literally just looked like a car park, like a disused car park, not even a nice car park. And I was just like, okay, yeah, this sounds cool. But I mean, obviously they had vision for it. And then I met Evgeny on that day as well. And I was just like, right, let's go for it. But I mean, I always knew that he had big plans for it. And I mean, from seeing what it was then to now seeing what it is now, it's just like, it's crazy.
Yeah, it really made that building quite stunning. And I mean, the centerpiece of the staircase, just beautiful. It's a piece of art in itself, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, some people, I think they just come for the staircase, not the food. But no, I mean, yeah, it's visually a stunning restaurant. It makes me proud to work there. When I'm walking around it, and just like when I do, I don't know, when you get people in for trial and stuff, I generally show them around the bar, the wine cellar, the PDR rooms, and into the restaurant, just so, because it's a beautiful, beautiful setting. And it makes me proud to walk around it and knowing that I'm the head chef there. And I didn't design it, but I've been part of it. You know what I mean? It's a stunning, stunning building.
Yeah. So were you there literally from day dot from the opening, or was there a little bit of overlap between Bella Zoo and Hyde?
No, so I was actually there almost 5 or 6 months before Hyde opened.
Okay.
So me, Ollie, Zach, who's our pastry chef, executive pastry chef, and then Luke Selby, who used to be the head chef of Above, we all started in a development kitchen in the middle of Park Royal on an industrial site, just renting this unit. And we were just developing the menu from there, basically. And then we were working on our laptops, trying to build our team, recruitment, designing the menu, ordering the equipment. Like, there's a lot of planning that goes into it. So we had a good 4 months to do that. I've been with them 3.5, coming on to 4 years now, Hyde.
So I know that the Hyde first floor, the tasting menu floor, which is phenomenal. I've eaten there, absolutely loved it. You've kind of been through a couple of chefs. I know Luke left. How much of a role do you play in that menu now?
Well, obviously, it's been a bit of tough times lately, and the restaurant's pretty much been shut for 80% of the year. So I predominantly am ground. I'm the head chef of ground. But then we've just promoted my senior Sue Martin. He's going to be taking over as head chef and Above. I will be kind of overseeing it slightly, supporting role, and all kind of have like a one team kind of feel to it. Martin is more than capable of doing this. He deserves it more than anyone. He's worked with me from day one, been pretty much my number two from day one, amazing chef. So me and Ollie decided to promote him for the role. But I think before, I didn't really have much of an influence or anything to do with Above, but going forward now I will have a bit to do with it. I mean, predominantly most of my role will still be on the ground. It's a bigger kitchen, it's a bigger role, it's a lot more chefs down there, but I will be assisting in Above, just helping out when needed. And then,
I mean, would you say that your role is more delegation and management of the team as opposed to actual cooking?
I think, yeah, I mean, it always has been, to be honest. It's such a beast, Hyde. I mean, obviously we've got Ollie, who's the exec chef of both floors, so he's very much in charge of Above, ground, pastry, everything, very organises all the food, dishes are obviously his. But then just getting all the systems in place and different operations, etc., is kind of always been more my role. And I would say, yes, the delegating and putting it down to my team. And you won't find me cooking on meat or fish or anything like that. I'm on the pass, calling out the checks, running the service. And then when it comes to doing rotors, organizing or recruiting or chemicals, or we need to get maintenance in, or I don't know, whatever that he's doing is kind of like Josh needs to organize in a way, or we do it together. But operationally wise, I probably take on a little bit more.
Have you guys changed things around and reflected on maybe what you were serving before and the new things that you could possibly do? I guess you would just say recipe development, right?
Yeah, I mean, yes and no. So obviously we haven't opened Above yet. We haven't opened anything yet because we're still locked down. We actually opened the terrace this week, so we've got six or seven tables outside. So we basically we haven't really pushed forward the menus for Above and stuff, so Martin's not had his chance to get up there yet. And also regarding recipe development, we've had a lot of time, but then we also haven't had a lot of time because we've been doing Hyde at home, and I had to furlough probably 80% of the staff. And there was probably six of us doing takeaway a day. So we were full on busy doing that. I mean, I was cooking then. I was also washing pots. We had no KPs or anything. So there are new dishes for the terrace menu at the moment. A lot of the big hitters have come back. The classic high dishes have come back. But there are some new dishes, and especially for Hyde Above, there's some quite a few new dishes that Ollie's bringing. So it's exciting for the new tasting menu going on above, yeah.
So you mentioned putting your team on furlough. How has the pandemic affected your team in terms of, you know, morale and just as a whole?
I'm not going to lie, it's been a bit of a rubbish year, I'm sure we all know. Our industry got hit quite hard. Furlough hit some people quite hard. I've lost a few guys. And it's, I think some people have kept themselves busy and some people have got a bit down, with a bit depressed and stuff. I mean, I've been quite fortunate that I've actually worked throughout. So I've been working full time throughout. I mean, fortunate and not fortunate, because obviously it is nice to have some time off. But no, I mean, I would say it's great now we're back. I mean, we've done 2 full days now, or 3 full days back cooking for people, actually plating on plates. So it's nice to start rebuilding the team, rebuilding that morale. I just want to come in, get rid of any negativity, really positive vibes, and just really hope that guys want to push forward with us. It's been a horrible year, and hopefully we can push forward and just put it all behind us. I mean, for me, the past is the past, and we just look to the future now.
Yeah. I mean, of course, we all know that to have a strong team, you need a very strong leader. How have you kept your own morale up? I mean, how do you pass on that positivity to your team?
So I think that's, I don't know, how do you do that? Depends what how I wake up in the morning. I've got no one telling me that. So I mean, Ollie's an amazing person, amazing chef and everything, but he doesn't come to me and say, oh, morale and different things like that. We have our own relationship with each other and stuff. So I've kind of not got someone reminding me of that. So I kind of just have to remind myself to get the guys positive. And obviously the days where we are going to have a bad service and morale is going to be down and stuff like that. But I guess you just got to be positive within yourself and be happy with what you're doing. What I really say to the guys now more than ever, if you're not happy, don't work here. If you're not happy in what you're doing, then you shouldn't be doing it. As a chef, especially at our caliber, you work 16, 17 hours a day. So if you're not...
You love it.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. You've got to love it. I mean, if you don't, then there's no point doing it, really. So I think everyone needs to be positive. You need to love what you do. You need to love the food. And I think that for me, I'm passionate about what we do, passionate about the food and the suppliers we use. And just got to keep reminding yourselves of that, really, and the beautiful place we work at and what we achieve. I mean, we're one of the busiest Michelin restaurants in the UK, so if not the busiest. So you just got to keep reminding yourself of little things like that, because you do have tough days. But if you just keep reminding yourself of these little points, then I think it helps overall.
Do you have a strong support structure at home to kind of to help you with, you know, with your good days? Wake up in the morning and, you know, you have a good day because you've got that support around you at home.
Yeah, I mean, I think behind every chef there needs to be a strong woman or a strong partner, personally. For me, I've got an amazing partner at home. I mean, she's not only very successful in herself, like I said, she's technical director of a massive company. She's the only European on the board of directors as well for the company. Everyone else is English, so she's in her own right. She's earned that. But then also she's an amazing mother, supports me wherever I can. I mean, being a chef and doing the hours we do, I can be away 70 hours a week. And obviously when you've got kids at home, you need to have that strong support. And also I need someone to tell my thoughts to and to say my negative thoughts and moan and stuff. And she's kind of absorbs it all, but also gives me good advice. So, yeah.
Yeah. Sounds like a really amazing partnership, and also as she's in hospitality as well, she can understand the industry that you're in really well, and obviously the long hours, they don't make it easy at all for anyone, so it's really, really great to have that. And you also have, I mean, you have a great work ethic. Is that something that you've picked up from your childhood, or from, you mentioned your dad earlier on, is that something that you picked up when you were growing up, or is it something that you learned in kitchens?
No, I mean, that's completely down to my family. I've got a big family, but my dad and my mom, their work ethic is amazing. I mean, they got me working from a very young age. So I was working for my dad quite young, maybe 10 years old. So he owns an event business. So outdoor entertainment. He has like quad bikes, rage buggies. He does crossbows, archery, team building events, all different things like this. And I would help him on the events basically, or I would help clean all the quad bikes with a jet spray or whatever it might have been. He would grab us down at work and get his graft in for him. And to be honest, I'm going to do exactly the same to my boys somehow. I think it's an amazing thing to do. And I think I've learned it from him and from my mom and my brothers and sister. We've all kind of had that relationship in our family. And my dad has always worked 7 days a week and always had his own businesses and stuff. So I think they've definitely brought that on me.
Phenomenal. And so when you look for staff, do you look for skills that complement yours, or do you look for skills that effectively replicate yours in the kitchen?
I think, to be honest, everyone's different. So it's quite hard, especially because Hyde's such a big kitchen. You need so many chefs. Obviously, what we always ask for is a good attitude and good work ethic, and we'll teach the rest. I mean, they don't have to have a Michelin CV or anything like that. As long as they do have a good attitude, they're open to it, I think we just teach the rest. I mean, obviously, it's great if they do have extra benefits of having a Michelin CV and stuff. But I think if you come with an open mind and just wanting to learn and wanting to work, then yeah, I think that's the best way, really.
Are you hiring at the moment?
Yes, I'm currently after a few chefs. So if you look this, hit me up. we're after a couple of chefs, maybe two. It's just a bit strange, to be honest. Every time I look on Instagram, it seems like every kitchen's hiring.
Yes, and they are.
A
lot of messages for various places to let, because there's obviously a lot of chefs following my account. So, funnily enough, I get a lot of messages asking if I know of any jobs going. So it's just kind of one of those things I've just started putting out there. But yeah, that's really, really good to know. So anyone listening, should they just get in touch with you via Instagram, Josh Angus Chef?
Yeah, they can have Instagram or josh@hyde.co.uk's email. But then, like I said, there's lots of different apartments. Obviously, we have Hyde Above, we have Hyde Ground, there's bakery. We have an amazing bakery at Hyde where we do our own croissants, spinoiseries, our own bread, pastry. It's endless.
Amazing. So what advice would you give to a young budding chef?
Advice, I would say, kind of what I mentioned before. I mean, come in open-minded, with a good work ethic, really just wanting to learn as much as you can as well. Keep learning, amazing thing about our job is like you're just constantly learning. Like I'm always learning on the job. There's always different recipes to learn. There's always different things. Just keep asking questions. But also be sure that this is what you want to do. As we've mentioned before, it isn't a job, it's a lifestyle, especially at our standard. It can take over your life. It can be 70 hours a week. So you need to be positive that this is what you want to do and you want to dedicate yourself to it. But yeah, just learn, ask questions, and yeah, hopefully that's all you need.
And what's the best advice that you've ever been given?
That's a question. I guess asking questions and just keep reading up and stuff like that, really. There's no one specific thing. It's just more keep asking questions, especially if you don't know as well. I mean, the worst thing you can do is do something wrong because you don't know and you end up looking stupid. I would say, yeah, probably just keep asking questions is probably my best advice I've been given. Yeah. Can't name the chef, sorry.
Well, as you said, there's quite a few different people. So, yeah. And so which, I mean, is there an industry figure that you most admire?
I mean, I have to say, obviously, Ollie is very up there. I mean, I've worked with Ollie for maybe coming up to 6 years now, I'd say. He's become a great mentor and seeing his food style develop as well. I mean, what we did at Debut was great, but I think what we do at Hyde is just amazing. And he keeps developing different ways and his style. And obviously, Debut, we had a certain style and we were limited to what we could do in that such small space. But I mean, Ollie has a very hard job of, obviously, with our influence and with us helping him as the senior chefs, but he has to create dishes for Hyde Above, Hyde Ground, the bakery, pastry, Hideaway. And to be honest, it's pretty endless. He keeps developing and stuff like that, which is amazing that we keep doing it all together. But I mean, sometimes we just try a dish once and it's just bang on. And I mean, sometimes when he does that, I mean, I think his flavors are amazing. It just shows how intellectual he is, that he can just write up a recipe and it's just, yeah, it's bang on straight away. But no, obviously Ollie's very much up there. I've said before in interviews, bit of a cliche, but Gordon Ramsay, for me, what he's achieved, for one, he's got lots of kids. So he's a family man, obviously. He's obviously earned the highest accolade of 3 stars. At one point, I think he had 18 or 20 Michelin stars. But then also he's had an amazing career with books and TV. It just feels like there's nothing he hasn't done. Obviously I think them two are very high up for me, but there's so many chefs. I mean, Tom Kerridge is amazing what he's done as well. Jason Atherton. Simon Rogan. I mean, so many chefs that I look up to be honest.
Yeah. And where do you see yourself in 5 years from now?
Good question. Working as Bellazua development chef. No, I'm joking.
You said that was at the age of 45. So
yeah.
I'm not going to be 45 in 5 years.
No. I don't know. I keep asking myself this because just somewhere happy. I haven't really thought about it, if I'm honest. I'm happy in where I am. I'm happy in what I'm doing. I keep thinking to myself, do I want to open my own place? I'm like, I do want to do it because, like I said, my parents have always owned their own business. So it's kind of makes me want to open my own business, but then also doesn't want me to own my own business because I see how much it takes over your life. But I don't know. I mean, I'd like to obviously have still be working at the level we're working in, Michelin star, whether it's my own and not with Hyde. To answer the question is, I just don't know. As long as I'm happy somewhere and keep developing the food that we're doing and just happy with what we're achieving, then that's it. I mean, I'm living each day by it comes. I mean, who knows what's around the corner? I am on a good thing at Hyde. It's an amazing place to work. Amazing to work with Ollie and different guys we've got on board, Zach, Martin. It's an amazing place to work there. I've got some amazing sous chefs, Yanis, Dave. I mean, the list is endless, do you know what I mean? And I said, just embrace it for what it is and live each day by each day. I mean, I'm happy at home. I've got an amazing family. And also, it's, you don't know what's going around the corner. I mean, COVID hit us and they stopped the industry for almost a year. So it's, what's the point in planning? Let's just live day by day and enjoy what we do.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, on that note, it has been such a fun interview. I've really enjoyed chatting with you, Josh. One last question, which is, tell me something I couldn't possibly know about yourself.
Okay, so I've been thinking hard about this one, actually. And I'm like, I was thinking hard. I was like, crap, I've had a boring life. there's one thing, it's very similar to Ollie's as well, actually. But I don't know if you do know this, but I'm due to have another son in 7 weeks.
Congratulations.
So having another little boy in 1st of June, he's due to join my other little one. So I've got another boy at 16 months at the moment. And then I'm stepfather to two other kids. So it'll be our fourth child.
Wow.
I would say obviously that's something I don't know if you knew about me.
Didn't know that. Sounds like you got a house full and lots of
fun. Exactly. And then trying to learn a bit of Spanish. I've been putting it off for as long as I can. but my fiance is Spanish. She was born in the Basque Country. It turns out that my little son Milo, who's 16 months, now speaks more Spanish than me. So I think it's time that I need to start planning on doing that. So little bits of that, really.
I was listening to Jay Rayner's podcast and he spoke about a company called Babbel that helps people learn languages. And there's something amazing about it. I don't know what it is. I've tried it, but that was advertised. So I just thought I'd share that with you.
Check it out.
Well, Josh, thank you for your time. It's been so much fun. The hours just whizzed by. And guys, if you want to keep up with what Josh is up to, he is at Josh Angus Chef on Instagram and I'm at Posh Nosh Gal. And if you enjoyed today's interview, don't forget to subscribe, rate and review.